It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
When you look at that caravan and you look of largely very, you know, big percentage of men, young, strong, a lot of bad people in there, people that are in gangs. We don't want them in this country. If they want to come into the country, you have to apply like other people. We have millions of people coming in. They're applying. They're coming in legally. We have a very strong border. I called up the military. This caravan is not, they're wasting their time. We're going to build tent cities. We're going to put tents up all over the place. We're not going to build structures and spend all of this, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. We're not letting them into this country.
That was President Trump with Laura Ingraham last night on Fox News. Sandy Rios with you. And the latest news is that the president is actually sending in troops, 5,000 troops. And you heard him just now describe, at least in part, what they're going to be doing. We have an imminent invasion at the southern border. And we have a left that feels like it's okay. We have Republican establishment who really, you know, could have stopped this if they'd done something. There is a lot at stake in the election 1 week from today. And could I just say, if I haven't hit it hard enough each and every day, could I remind you, please vote, please, please, please. And my personal opinion is that the good guys, many of them are centered in the Freedom Caucus. I've told you that many, many times. A lot of the incumbents in the Freedom Caucus are in really tough races. Dave Brat is behind Abigail Spanberger in Virginia 7. Abigail Spanberger is the Democratic candidate funded by George Soros. She, along with three other females around the country. And Abigail was herself an instructor at what was the Saudi Academy, referred to by Chuck Schumer as Terror High. So we have a choice. We have a definite choice in the kinds of people we're going to elect. And really, it does once again fall on the shoulders of the American people to step up to the plate, pay attention, read, get a voter guide. AFA has a great voter guide, AFAaction.net. You can get the voter guide. We'll put the link again on our Facebook page, but you can find it. And it gives a really great kind of broad spectrum on these candidates and gives you insight into who people are that you can embrace and who you cannot. And so I just want to add, I'm going to jump to this. This was this morning in Breitbart. Death threats, assaults, vandalism, over 40 acts of left-wing thuggery in October, just in October so far. And they list a whole bunch of them, like on October 3rd, Defense Secretary James Mattis and FBI Director Wray were sent letters containing ricin. On October 25th, which I failed to talk to you about just because of time, the New York Times ran a story fantasizing about the assassination of President Trump. That was the day after the alleged pipe bomber, the fake bombs with the timers not set to go off, sent out his bombs. And the New York Times had the audacity to run this story detailing the assassination of President Trump. I'm not even going to go in. It's just creepy. I heard part of it. That's what they did. And then there was an assassination attempt against Senator Susan Collins over the Kavanaugh hearing. Five Republican campaign centers and clubs have been vandalized. There have been 12 rape and death threats aimed at Republicans, their families, and supporters. And, of course, you probably saw October 11th that Trump supporters' truck was lit on fire. It had a 2020 bumper sticker on it. That's just a smattering of the 40 acts of violence, assaults, vandalism against conservatives and Republicans in the month of October. There is a lot resting on this election. We see the border being invaded, and we see no action except from President Trump. We have people who would have done something about it. There's a handful in the Senate, and there are several in the House, but not enough. And so, please, I beg you, take this election seriously. This is not, you know, I think people that are not concerned, it reminds me of this. You ever have somebody that you know who gets diagnosed with some serious cancer, and maybe you're just, you have one of two reactions. You feel tremendous compassion and you want to go help, do everything you can, take meals, spend time with them, share their grief, or you say to yourself, I'm too busy. My life is too busy. I can't do that. So you don't call and you don't go over because you're too busy to take on that grief. Now, in that case, you know, their fate doesn't necessarily affect you. But in this case, you cannot abject or remove yourself from the eventual pain of not having taken responsibility at this time, which I believe is true. It's a Paul Revere moment. This is your time to be a patriot. We talk about our founding fathers and how they rose up, and the leaders of the revolution pledged their lives and their honor and their property, and none of them came out of this rich. This is our time to be a patriot. And it isn't, I'm talking about nationalism. I'm not ashamed of that. I actually love my country. I'm not ashamed of that. America is my family. But it's broader than that. It's about principles that are in conjunction and comport with scriptural teaching. We're talking about the sanctity of life. We're talking about euthanasia. We're talking about overspending, irresponsibility. We're talking about changing gender, which is not possible. We're talking about confusing our children and sexualizing them, even in our early grade school and preschool. These are just a few of the things that are at stake. You must rise up. You must do something. You must be the patriots of this 2018 election. Now, I want to go on because this morning on Axios, this morning, actually, from Axios, there's a story about an interview they did with President Trump, which is pretty stunning, actually. And so let's just play it. It's clip 3.
On immigration, some legal scholars believe you can get rid of birthright citizenship without changing the Constitution.
With an executive order.
Exactly.
Right.
Have you thought about that?
Yes.
Tell me more.
It was always told to me that you needed a constitutional amendment.
Right. 14th Amendment.
You don't. Number one, you don't need that. Number two,
I mean, that's in dispute.
You could definitely
that's very much in dispute.
Well, you can definitely do it with an act of Congress, but now they're saying I can do it just with an executive order. Now, how ridiculous. We're the only country in the world where a person comes in, has a baby, and the baby is essentially a citizen of the United States for 85 years with all of those benefits. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it has to end.
Have you talked about that with counsel?
Yeah. I have.
So where in the process?
It's in the process. It'll happen. With an executive order. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly
a very interesting
question.
I didn't think anybody knew that but me. I thought I was the only one.
All right. So that was an interaction that they captured on camera, and it's going to cause a great stir. You can imagine. But that is the motivation for so many thousands and thousands of people. They say like 1,800. I don't know if it's 1,800 a month or 1,800 a day that are trying to get across the border right now. 1,000 illegal immigrants coming in just rapidly. And of course, and Chinese are coming here and having babies in California so that they can become citizens. And it is a situation that has gotten out of control. So the president sounds like he intends to do something about it. You can imagine that a court will try to stop him, and you can imagine how this is going to play out. It will go to the Supreme Court, and then we'll see what the new makeup of the Supreme Court decides on that. Meanwhile, today, the president and his wife, Melania, the first lady, are going to Pittsburgh to pay their respects to the survivors and to honor the lives of the 11 people that were killed. John Roberts has a report on that. And I want to play this because I want to tell you something about John Roberts. Here we go.
The horrific shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue was also on the White House agenda today. Press Secretary Sarah Sanders becoming visibly emotional at times.
This atrocity was a chilling act of mass murder. It was an act of hatred. And above all, it was an act of evil.
But the president also took on his favorite foil, the news media, tweeting, "There is great anger in our country, caused in part by inaccurate and even fraudulent reporting of the news. The fake news media, the true enemy of the people, must stop the open and obvious hostility and report the news accurately and fairly." While there is nothing to suggest the synagogue killer's hatred was motivated by the media, President Trump says his tweets were justified.
I was in the headline when they got him. They didn't say bomber found. They talked about Trump in the headline.
President Trump will travel to Pittsburgh tomorrow in what he hopes will be a moment of national unity. But 11 Jewish leaders from the area have said the president is not welcome unless and until he fully denounces white nationalism.
Does the White House believe this president has done enough to denounce white nationalism?
The president has denounced racism, hatred, and bigotry in all forms on a number of occasions.
President Trump says that he will visit Pittsburgh tomorrow to pay his respects to the 11 people who were killed in the synagogue. He said that he'll also visit a hospital where he'll meet with the law enforcement officers who were shot during the standoff with the suspect, as well as meet with some of the victims in the congregation who survived that horrific shooting.
All right, John Roberts of Fox. Of course, that was last night because the president is going to Pittsburgh today. Now, let me tell you something about John. You know that I often criticize John Roberts because he really does bend his reports. I don't think he's a trustworthy source. And so I'll tell you why I feel that way. I'll give you a concrete example. He mentioned not in that report once, but he's repeated it now three times, that Jewish leaders had rejected President Donald Trump's intention of visiting the Jewish community Pittsburgh in the wake of Saturday's synagogue shooting. The Hill, New York Daily News, Washington Post ran those stories claiming that Jewish leaders don't want Trump to visit. But the demand came from Bend the Arc, which is a left-wing organization committed to electing Democrats and founded in part by Alexander Soros, the son of left-wing billionaire mega-donor George Soros. By the way, the actual Jewish leader from the Tree of Life Synagogue, where the 11 people were killed, said Monday that President Trump is always welcome to his congregation. And so it's a false report. John's repeated it three times. And here's what's happening. There is a setup now to a last-minute push to make you think that Donald Trump is an anti-Semite. You know that. You've picked that up, right? In fact, let me just play clip 8 because it'll give you a little bit of an idea of how this is happening.
This evil anti-Semitic attack is an assault on all of us. It's an assault on humanity.
The president's not responsible for these acts. Again, the very first action that the president did was condemn these heinous acts. The very first thing that the media did was condemn the president.
I think this president's whole modus operandi is to divide us.
All right, so that's, you know, you see how this goes, and I could play you other clips, but I'm running out of time in this segment. But the point is, they're trying to paint him as an anti-Semite. It's not the first time. They are desperate. My understanding is that in New Jersey, there is a real thin margin between some of these congressional races, and also in the senator's race. Menendez is in trouble by his challenger. And so consider this just one more push to try to wrest the House from the control of the Republicans, and of course to do what damage the left can on the Senate races as well. And so they are desperate to paint President Trump as an anti-Semite. Let me just say that there's an article this morning from PJ Media that talks about all of the Democrats who have sided with, posed with Louis Farrakhan. They include Keith Ellison, Al Sharpton, Eric Holder, Maxine Waters, Barack Obama himself. And if that doesn't puzzle you or make you wonder, perhaps you don't know much about Louis Farrakhan. Let's hear what a great guy he is from his own words, clip 2.
The satanic Jews that control everything and mostly everybody.
You are not the chosen of God. You are the chosen of Satan.
I'm talking about the wicked ones in the Jewish community that run America, run the government, run the world, own the banks, own the means of communication. They are my enemies.
All right, Louis Farrakhan, and there he says that's just a little clip from the many things he said through the years about how he hates the Jews. There was a photo with him and Barack Obama that was not revealed until after Barack Obama became president. Louis Farrakhan said that, I remember I was in Chicago. I worked for Alan Key's campaign against Barack Obama. And I can tell you that Louis Farrakhan thought that President Obama was the next thing since sliced bread. He loved him. He considered him his son. That's the way it is, folks. We'll talk about where the anti-Semitism is. When we return, I want to talk to you about transgenderism in public schools. Another stunning story. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service, urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit afa.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
When it comes to politics, it's normally not a good idea to insult the overwhelming majority of your constituents. Sarah Inamoroto may learn that lesson the hard way. She's a Democratic socialist running for the Pennsylvania State House. She defeated the incumbent Democrat in a stunning upset. Had this to say about the voters in her district.
So I just look at my district, right? And it's 93% white. My district, which I know is like white working class, poor folk who are racist, because it's so much easier for them to look to their side and say, I'm going to blame that person.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Inamoroto called the white working class people in her district a bunch of racist. The mainstream media pretty much ignored the story. But could you imagine the media firestorm had she said that about black or Hispanic voters? I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The growing controversy over transgender bathrooms has gained the attention of the White House. The letter, signed by officials from the Education and Justice Departments, is not bound by law, but contains an implicit threat that schools choosing not to abide by the recommendation could face lawsuits or lose federal aid. The move comes as the Justice Department and North Carolina battle in federal court over the state's new law limiting public bathroom access for transgender people.
They created state-sponsored discrimination against transgender individuals who simply seek to engage in the most private of functions.
We believe a court, rather than a federal agency, should tell our state what the law requires.
The fight over transgender bathrooms is spilling over into other states, including Texas, Michigan, Florida, and Georgia, where the issue is up for debate.
Sandy Rios back with you. That's just another wonderful gift President Barack Obama gave to us. He made our schools open the bathrooms to boys and girls and insisted with threat of penalty that they do it. And it happened quickly and was pushed upon schools all over the country. And what you probably didn't realize at the time was they were also implementing These transgender policies in public school where if kids felt like boys, thought they were girls, didn't have to be, just felt like they were, they could be given a name, were given a name by their teacher of the gender that they thought they were. They were allowed to use the bathroom that comported the dressing room. Some of these policies, many of them actually, went on to say that in overnight trips of, say, the speech team, the debate team, or, you know, what other kinds of teams and groups, you had to be able to share quarters with the people that you identified with sexually, regardless of your biological sex. I could go on and on because we've seen the results of this, haven't we? We've seen them in Target dressing rooms that have adopted the same policy. We have seen the madness unfold and unleashed in our country. And you might want to know, I've told you, but I want to repeat that just a few days ago, the Trump administration, a memo was revealed from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services that said that a definition of sex and gender should be defined on a biological basis that is clear, grounded in science, objective, and administrable. Well, you'd think that would be a good thing, right? But the New York Times got a hold of this memo, and now we are getting some feedback that inside the Trump administration, even some of his cabinet and members are worrying over this very simple common sense statement. Dr. Susan Berry is a writer. She mostly appears in Breitbart. That's when I see her stuff. But Susan is an expert on this issue. She writes about schools and LGBT issues, especially transgenderism, since it is the lead topic on this issue right now. And she joins us this morning. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Sandy.
All right. So I didn't tip your hand to what you have written, which really appalled me, because you wrote just a few days ago about someone inside the Trump administration who opposes this. Can you tell us who that is and what that's all about?
Well, the reports are that Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is not especially eager to go along with HHS and the Justice Department, perhaps, in the Trump administration regarding the possible establishment of a legal definition of sex that would ultimately ensure that an individual's identification for the purposes of Title IX, which is the federal law that prohibits sex discrimination, that individuals would be identified as either male or female, which would be determined by their biological state and not by whatever gender they say they are at any given time. So the interesting thing is that Mrs. DeVos, again, this is the second time that we've had a report that Mrs. DeVos has been at odds with the perhaps other members of the Trump administration over this issue. Now, I always like to give the caveat, however, that all of these reports come from the New York Times and the Washington Post, and we know that both of these media often like to suggest that there's divisiveness in the Trump administration. However, when this happened over a year ago, when the New York Times had a report that Attorney General Sessions was also discussing with President Trump himself about the transgender colleague letter that was sent by the Obama administration, that Mrs. DeVos did not want to go along with that either, and she even issued a separate statement afterwards saying that LGBT students were particularly vulnerable students, and she wanted to make sure her Office for Civil Rights was protecting their rights. But she did make a special statement about that. So it seems to me that she has some leanings in that direction, that she feels that they need to be a protected class for some reason. We don't know the reason why, but it does seem that she's moving in that direction. And so there is some concern about how this is all going to come out. Now, you know, HHS, Health and Human Services, has been very clear about the direction they're moving in, but they're also saying that, you know, they're abiding at this point by a federal court that indicated that President Obama's definition of sex, which included gender identity, is overly broad. And that was already ruled on last year. And so they've been abiding by that ruling and doing that. So there's you know, I think it's important to remember, and HHS has underlined this, that all children in school, all students in school are protected because of their civil rights, you know, and so the government has already protected. All of these things that the Obama administration did was add extra protections for special classes of people, and that's where the identity politics comes in.
You know, I have to say, Susan, I'm sure you know this is true. I certainly know it's true. This is not new for Betsy DeVos. If these reports are true, it's not new. She has been soft on this issue for a long time. That was one of the big concerns I had about her appointment, besides Common Core, to the position that she's taken. So this is not out of character. This is in keeping with her prior actions on these issues. I also want to point out that according to the New York Times and the Post, one or the other, that it is Attorney General Sessions who is at odds with Betsy DeVos over this. I think that's important for people to understand because he's been under fire so much and people don't really know the good things that he's accomplishing. And this is certainly one of them where he's kind of putting his foot down. But the president, I was trying to read, I'm sure you probably wrote this and I can't find it, but you say the president responded, he was questioned about this. About whether he was, you tell the story, Susan, you know better than I do.
Well, this was, again, reported in the Washington Post, and I could not find any particular statement that the president made, but the Post reported this. So they must have asked the president at some point, perhaps at an event, maybe one of his rallies or something. Somebody came up to him and asked him this. So he said that that his administration is looking at the issue. We have a lot of different concepts right now, he reportedly said. They have a lot of different things happening with respect to transgender right now, and we're looking at it seriously. And then he added, you know what I'm doing, I'm protecting everybody. So that was the statement that the Post reported.
Yeah, and that's a great comment. It's amazing to me how President Trump seems to always have common sense. You know, he was challenged about whether, aren't you protecting these poor transgender students? And he's saying, I'm protecting everyone. I want to protect everyone.
And I think that's what HHS is saying, too. You know, Caitlin Oakley, I'm sorry, she's the national spokesperson for HHS, and she released a statement saying exactly that, you know, that that we're going to be protecting everybody's civil rights. We're going to vigorously enforce all the laws as written and passed by Congress prohibiting discrimination in health care. And, I mean, of course, their purview is health care at HHS on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, sex, age, and disability. It's the Obama administration that started toying with sex and started opening it up to gender identity so that anyone who's biologically a male and says that they're a female within themselves can go into women's restrooms and shower rooms, et cetera.
You know, just to be clear, this is Exhibit A of why personnel is policy. This is a case where the president appointed some really great people at HHS, Health and Human Services, and they've been working hard behind the scenes to do some incredible things, and we will leave it at that. Whether it be the issue of the sanctity of life or now this issue, they're slugging away, and you've got General Sessions, who also is slugging away, maybe not in the way people want, but behind the scenes he's doing some great things on immigration and on these moral issues. And then you've got Betsy DeVos, who was a bad pick from my perspective. Many of us were very upset about him picking her for Secretary of Education. And we see the results of choosing people who don't embrace good policy. And we need to be clear about one thing before we move on, because I want to talk to you about something else. This is only a memo. It's not enforceable. That was not even the final draft that they got a hold of, right?
That's right. We don't have anything solid from the administration at this point. I think probably, you know, what President Trump said was where it stands, you know, that there's still a lot of discussion about it. And I think that In a previous article that I wrote, I did get a direct statement from Roger Severino, you know, who runs the Office for Civil Rights at HHS, and you know, he said that, you know, we are still working on it. And, you know, of course, you know, somehow these stories are leaked to media like the New York Times.
I wonder how. Can't imagine how that happens, Susan.
Yeah, I know.
And the, the reason is, let me just say, it's because the, these agencies are still just chock full of career employees and people who are very much on the other side of things. And that's why so little gets done. It's amazing as much gets done as gets done. So you've got Roger Severino and others. They're surrounded by, really, in terms of position, enemies on their position. So that's why it gets leaked.
Yeah,
I interrupted you. So sorry.
I was just going to say that, you know, I wanted to just comment on your statement about Mrs. DeVos, that she was a very controversial pick from the very beginning, and many conservatives, constitutionalists, however you, you know, describe yourself, were very concerned about that choice.
This is an impossible task. I'm going to bring up something that we can't discuss in 4 minutes, but you wrote an article recently. By the way, we'll put your article on Betsy DeVos on our Facebook page so people can read and share it. You wrote recently about sort of the father, or the one who labeled, started this whole gender thing. His name was Dr. Money. And if you can, in brief, tell us, Susan, about what he did and the implications of that on what we're experiencing now.
Well, it really was about how Dr. Money, who was a psychologist at Johns Hopkins starting in the 1950s, he really guided the modern transgender movement. He was the one who essentially sowed the seeds of transgenderism at Johns Hopkins, and then that spread on to even Europe. Dr. Quentin Van Meter, who currently is the president of the American College of Pediatricians, he was actually a fellow in at Johns Hopkins in Dr. Money's one of his training programs, and he referred to Dr. Money as a sexual revolutionist and actually as possessing perversions, and ultimately he said Money created the preamble to the current day transgender movement. So it's really an amazing story, especially the fact that Dr. Van Meter was there and witnessed much of this. And how essentially Money eventually came to the conclusion that people should be should have surgeries, even children should have hormones, and ultimately have surgeries if they just want to change their gender.
You know, Susan, I remember seeing a video of Dr. Money's work with that young boy whose male genital was damaged during circumcision, and how he decided to remove it, and he said it didn't make any difference. It was a long video. It really impacted me. It was before transgenderism was really mainstreamed. It's been a number of years ago. And turns out that this kid, when he grew up, was tormented and wanted to be a boy, realized that something was terribly wrong, no matter how many dolls they let him play with and how many hormones they injected, and he ended up killing himself. So Dr. Money's work was an abject failure. So,
And it was very, very controversial, and he because the parents of this little boy who had the botched circumcision had consulted with Dr. Money and made the decision to raise him as a girl, and after what happened with the child when he grew up, Dr. Money was really, just panned completely because of his decision. Of course, in the New York Times obituary of Dr. Money, when he passed away some years ago, they quoted some people who were still saying Dr. Money was ahead of his time. He was, a great pioneer in this area. So there are even some people still defending him.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. Well, of course, they have to, because now his false, wicked teaching is being mainstreamed, and it's being applied to public schools and causing so much damage. By the way, Walt Heyer, I'm sure you know Walt. He's a transgender male to female, then back to male, who's been married now for 21 years, has reported that 50% of transgender persons attempt suicide. It's a dreadful thing that we have foisted upon Americans to embrace this nonsense. Susan Berry, we're going to put both your articles on our Facebook page. You are a national treasure. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Sandy. Take care.
All right, you too. All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Acts 17:26 conveys to us the reality that we were born and placed in the 21st century by God's specific design. He determined before time where we would live and when we would live there. If you're in Minnesota, Mississippi, or Maine, God put you there on purpose. He's not surprised by the darkness we see around us, nor is he caught off guard by it. In fact, he specifically prepared for it by making sure you're alive right now. God can do whatever he wants, but he's chosen to use you and me as ambassadors of his kingdom. We are his torches to light up the darkness.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. We believe that God knew what he was doing when he designed marriage to be exclusively between one man and one woman, and for each child to be raised by both a mother and a father. It's a form of child abuse to deliberately deprive a child of either a father or a mother and the unique, irreplaceable contribution each has to make to the life of a growing child. Every child, has a biological mother and a biological father. A recent USA Today story about two lesbians who, quote, conceived, end quote, a child through in vitro fertilization mentions in passing that the lesbians, quote, knew their own biological child would require a sperm donor. The sperm donor is the child's father, who will now be missing from the child's life forever.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Recent politically charged violence has spawned aggressive efforts to spin public perceptions. In particular, the left has prompted the false narrative that the purported pipe bomb plot and the actual murderous attack on the Pittsburgh synagogue were basically President Trump's fault. Here's a fact check. Billionaire George Soros' security detail got one of the so-called pipe bombs, and we're told now he's a victim of anti-Semitism. In fact, for years, his funding has prompted hostility towards Israel and enabled the world's most aggressive anti-Semites, rabid leftists, and their Sharia supremacist allies. The Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society was an object of the Pittsburgh shooter's enmity. But this organization, another putative victim of anti-Semitism, has long brought here inadequately vetted and potentially Jew-hating Muslim refugees and savaged President Trump for opposing such practices. Political violence is one unacceptable form of political warfare. Lying for political advantage is another. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Isn't it hard to believe that Christmas is going to be here before we know it? I just can't even. Have you made your list yet? I have not made my list. I'm full into campaign mode here. I can't think about Christmas yet, but we must. Operation Christmas Child, by the way, is a campaign run by Samaritan's Purse, who I have such great respect for, and American Family Association works with them all the time. They have sent, by the way, in their Operation Christmas Child, 157 million children have received gift-filled shoeboxes. And that's because 157 million of you have participated in this. Operation Christmas Child. If you haven't done it yet, I hope that you'll join us this year in this effort. In that, we share the good news and great joy of Jesus by packing gift-filled shoeboxes for children affected by war, poverty, disaster, famine, and diseases around the world. What you do is you get a box and you pack it with items that will capture a child's heart, like a soccer ball or it says ball and pump. I was trying to think, why would they need a pump? But it goes with the ball, a soccer ball and pump, or a doll. Then fill up the shoebox with other fun toys, school supplies, hygiene items to let children in more than 100 countries know God loves them and they are not forgotten. They're asking for a $9 per shoebox gift donation. You can go online through Follow Your Box and receive a QR code to find out the destination of your shoebox gift. So after you decide it, you can actually track where it goes. And if you would like to join us with this, National Collection Week is November 12th to the 19th. You drop off your shoebox at one of nearly 5,000 collection sites. And if you want to know, well, how do I get a box and where is the donation center? You go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. That's Operation Christmas Child, OCC. SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. Well, I think others are not in the Christmas mood as well. Maybe Jim Acosta is one of them because he had quite a back and forth with Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the White House briefing yesterday. Let's listen.
Shouldn't you reserve the term enemy for people who are actually the enemy of the United States rather than journalists?
The president's not referencing all media. He's talking about the growing amount of fake news that exists in the country, and the president's calling that out.
May I ask a follow-up, please? Mike, since you mentioned that, the president said this morning the fake news media, the true enemy of the people, must stop the open and obvious hostility and report the news accurately and fairly. Can you state for the record which outlets that you and the president regard as the enemy of the people?
I'm not going to walk through a list, but I think those individuals probably know who they are.
Would that include my outlet, which received
I don't think it's necessarily specific to a general, broad generalization of a full outlet at times. I think there's individuals that the president would be referencing. Jordan.
You're not going to state for the record then. I mean, if the president is going to say the fake news media are the enemy of the people, and if you're going to stand there and continue to say that there are some journalists, some news outlets in this country that meet that characterization, shouldn't you have the guts, Sarah, to state which outlets, which journalists are the enemy of the people?
Well, I think it's irresponsible of a news organization like yours to blame responsibility of a pipe bomb that was not sent by the president, not just blame the president, but blame members of his administration for those heinous acts. I think that is outrageous, and I think it's irresponsible.
All right. So, yay, Sarah. So here's the thing. Is the press the enemy of the people? Many of us believe that the press, not all of it, has become the third rail. I've been watching this since the 70s, so I know it's true. I'm not going to speculate. I know it's true. They are in the propaganda business. Not all of them, but most of the mainstream media is in the propaganda business, trying to make you think certain things that are not necessarily true, trying to mold your minds, leaving out vast amounts of information while providing you with stuff that it may be true, maybe partially true. Often what they do is just bury the real truth way down, like you used to talk about column inches in newspaper articles. And the whole idea of the newspaper writing was that you give the who, what, when, and where immediately in the article. And then you fill in all the sidebar details as you go down. It's a pyramid-style writing is what it used to be called. But now what we see is that if you actually read these newspaper articles and if you make it to the end of the article, sometimes they will actually include some facts, but they'll be so far down in the article toward the end that you don't really ever know what's happening. So there are a lot of ways where they can propagandize. And so I would argue that absolutely, in the sense that they're trying to destroy and undermine conservative values in this country, they are particularly trying to undermine a president duly elected by the American people. They are particularly trying to cause people to hate him. They're not objective reporters. They are not just calling balls and strikes. They're not doing that. They are not news reporting. They are propagandizing. They are the third rail. And in that sense, because they are fighting against and undermining the American people, and especially think about your children. They are after your children. They are trying to create a groupthink. They're trying to shut down free speech, even though they want to practice free speech themselves. They want to be able to say and write whatever they want to. They are not for that for you. And so, yes, I believe the president is right that not every outlet, but tons of them, cooperate in a process of the third rail, which makes them the enemy of the American people and the enemy of this country. And they also want to sort of sidebar it as though it's just about Trump personally. And I say it is not. This has been going on for decades. This is about deeply held beliefs, whether they're religious or otherwise. Deeply held beliefs. This is a war of ideas that has real consequences and could affect the future of this country, whether it has a future at all. And so, yes, in that regard, because they're trying to undermine and destroy at every turn, you know, the New York Times has a long dossier themselves of leaking information to international sources, of leaking secrets from outside of our government and printing them on their pages. So, yeah, you might say that the press is the enemy of the people. I don't have a problem with that because I've seen it with my own eyes. And speaking of that, I've been talking to you about that bomber, the would-be pipe bomber, Cesar Sayoc, and I haven't let go of this notion that something's not quite right about this. And the reason why I don't trust the reporting, besides all the things I just told you, I remember that Las Vegas shooter that killed so many people from the whatever floor it was at that hotel. Do you still know what happened there, anybody? Do you really know what happened, anybody? You know, from people that I know who are in the national security sphere, they believe that we still don't know the truth about that. And the press and the local authorities there and the FBI have never been straight with us about who that shooter was and what his motives were. Because it appears that it might have been that he hated conservative voters, and it was a country music festival that he had help from others, which we've never heard about. Now that's, look, I don't know if that's true, but have you even heard it? No, it's just sort of been silenced. Like they didn't know. And I think, what, 6 or 7 months after the incident, they came out with some report, and you still probably don't know what they said, right? Because they tend to bury these things. So why can't they tell us more? Why is that such a mystery? All right, so here we go with this Cesar Sayoc. 56 years old, certainly a confused man. Filipino, claimed he was Indian from an Indian tribe, and living in a van plastered with Trump posters, which we've already said is very strange because he's hardly making any money, and he's got this pristine van with, you know, nary a niche on it, living in Miami, covered with Trump posters, beautifully pasted to the window perfectly, none of them weathered at all of them looking very new. And so how does that happen? I don't know. How is it that these bombs, these pipe bombs, are, you know, equipped with timers that are not set, timers that couldn't be set, the bombs that really, as far as I know, none of them have gone off in the lab? If they had, we would hear about it. So I've been reading a lot of things about this. And one of the things I told you was that they are saying he's a Republican. Of course, he's a Trump supporter, and he's targeted all the people that Trump doesn't like Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama and Maxine Waters and George Soros, et cetera, the long list. Just happens to be all of the people that many of us talk about, including me. So I guess I'm responsible for this pipe bomber, too, according to their logic. You can't criticize anyone, or you're responsible for whatever bad happens to them. You know, that is political discourse. We have been... This is politics. You have, you trust some people, you don't trust others. You choose one party, you don't choose the other one. So we talk about, and we criticize over issues because we have big differences, and we cannot lose the ability to do that, which is what the press would like for us to do. Just shut up already. Don't criticize us. Don't criticize the things that we stand for, because if you do, if you criticize, then if something bad happens to them, you're responsible. That's what they're putting on President Trump, and that's what they will put on us as well. They have before in the past. Cesar Sayoc, by the way, here's someone that I know has found his MySpace profile. Evidently, they didn't have time to change that one, because I told you his other profiles were scrubbed, even though this journalist in South Dakota, whose name escapes me in the moment, has written quite a bit about it, captured quite a bit of Cesar Sayoc's information before they managed to scrub it. But in this particular MySpace profile, it says again, as the gentleman from South Dakota reported, that Cesar Sayoc was a longtime Democrat. It was only recently that somehow it ended up that he's listed as a Republican. Also, the point has been made that he has a long criminal rap sheet, and he was accused of committing a felony, threatening the Florida Power Company, as I recall. And felons can't vote in Florida. Just saying. So this whole business about, I don't know if he's registered as a Republican or Democrat. I'm not saying I know that. I'm just telling you there are enough questions here that we should be asking these questions. On the profile that the South Dakota journalist found, it said Democrat. On this MySpace profile found by another friend of mine, it says that he's a Democrat. So how is that? Does anybody have any curiosity about that? And why suddenly he has all these Trump posters beautifully attached to his van, pristine, not damaged, living in Miami, where President Trump is not exactly popular? How many of you have a Trump sticker on your car? How many of you drive to, you know, look, in D.C., you don't do that, drive downtown with a Trump sticker on your car? Are you know you're going to get in trouble. You know somebody's going to do something to it. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not overstating this. So there are some things that don't make sense about that. So I'm just saying, this is an article by George Grassley from Conservative HQ. And George has written an article where he points out that everything is Trump's fault is fake news at its worst. And he talks about the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, allegedly by the Saudis in the embassy in Turkey. And he talks about how quickly it morphed from the pros and cons of how the murder might influence America's Middle East policy to Trump's fake news attacks on the domestic media. And somehow, they say that emboldened the Saudis to kill Khashoggi. So that was Trump's fault. Then you have Cesar Sayoc, who is also, of course, Trump's fault, because as they're telling us, the narrative is that he's this Trump supporter. Look at all these pictures. Look what a fan he was. And here's a Trump supporter who now threatens all of these people that Donald Trump has spoken badly about, including George Soros. Oh, I'm going to digress for a second. I just can't help it. You know, George, the day after Sayoc sent these pipe bombs and the first one went to George Soros, George's son, Alex, came out with a long editorial that I think ran in the New York Times claiming that his poor dad was the object of anti-Semitism. And so this attack by Cesar Sayoc, alleged attack, a bomb that was sent to Soros, was about anti-Semitism and how horrible that is. But of course, George Soros is the furthest thing from a... Look, he is an atheist. His father cooperated with the Nazis so that other Jews would be killed by the Nazis. And he has the audacity, his son, to even claim his Jewishness at all on any level. Any of us that know about George Soros know that he does not lead with his Jewishness, and yet they're using that in this whole twisted narrative. And by the way, could I say that a friend of ours, Chris Farrell, who's with Judicial Watch, has been banned from Fox because he pointed out that George Soros is funding much of the caravan or the invasion on the southern border. So my point in telling you that story is that Fox's leadership is in the process of change. The younger generation is taking over, and we're already beginning to see signs. So Chris Farrell has been banned from Fox, and that is just tragic. We'll see if that's the end of it, but that's what's happening so far. So we live in dangerous times. We cannot trust our news media, and that's why I try to bring you as best I can as much good information every morning as I possibly can, as faithfully. And be diligent, stand guard, and remember, this is a Paul Revere moment. Next Tuesday is the election. Sandy Rios on the Morning, AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.